But we've been looking at, and we are getting close to the end of heart work on what it means to develop the character of Christ within us. What does it mean to become the sort of people Jesus has called us to be? What does it mean to be the sort of people that will fit in the new heavens and the new earth? We've been looking at the different virtues. We've looked at the fruit of the Spirit. We've looked at faith, hope, and love that will endure. We've looked at the Sermon on the Mount. We've looked at the Beatitudes. We've looked at a bunch of things. And we only have two more weeks we're going to follow in this vein, and then I'm going to switch it up. But today, we are going to look at a message. It's called How to Be Royalty. Remember I said that we're called to be two things. We're called to be priests and kings. We're called to worship and to reign. And what does it mean today to be royalty? What does it mean to be the kings, the under-kings that God has called us to be in advance of that day when it will be a full reality? So I thought we'd start. I have a video that Dalen is going to put on for us. This, just before you hit play, Dalen, this video, it's just 2 minutes long. There's no audio to it. But it looks from 3000 BC till 2000 AD at the spread of world religions. A few things, I don't know how much you caught of that. I found that tremendously interesting, and if you didn't, my apologies, we'll go on from here. But what it shows is different world religions starting, and the first thing that amazed me is the foundation of our faith. Christians, we began as a division of Judaism, right? We serve today the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And just in terms of geographical space, it's amazing to look at the tiny little Jewish population in comparison to the rest of the world that came and then flickered out and then came back and then flickered out and then came back. And that is the basis of our faith. The other thing I found was interesting is that when Christianity began, it's not like it started in one place and just went out in concentric. It looked like a disease almost. It was contagious. It was planted in all these little centers around the Mediterranean and then just expanded from there very quickly. And now I should say that map is very oversimplified. There's Christians all over the world, just as there's Muslims over the world, all over the world, Hindus and Buddhists and so on, and every religion. They were scattered. It's not that simplistic, but that is a simplification of the way world religions have developed over the years. And the thing that I find amazing is 2,000 years ago, roughly speaking, one person, Jesus Christ, died on a cross. And I've shared this before, but the definition of a failed Messiah is someone who was killed. Every other Messiah, person that claimed to be a Messiah that died, the movement was done. It was just kind of over, because when your leader's gone, it means you lost. So about 2,000 years ago, roughly, Jesus died. The Messiah died. And today, there's about 2 billion Christians in the world. It's the largest religion in the world. It's in every area. It's spread out like a virus. It's planted everywhere. That tells you a few things. It tells you that there's some divine power behind this. That there is something, for something, because it's not a power thing. It's not, oh, look at the power in this religion. It's going forth. It's, oh, your leader died and he rose again. That's the kind of love I need in my life. And it spread. It took off from there. It tells us that Christianity has always been a religion that's more than a religion, but as a religion, it's been one that's been focused on mission. It's been focused on going outside of ourselves. We've never been content just to keep the message in here. We've always been, we've had the divine mission to take what was in here and go. And so what we're going to do this morning, as I mentioned, is we're going to answer the question, what does it mean to be a king and a priest today? And it means we are going to worship, and it means we are going to follow the command of our king, what he told us to do, and go forward in mission. So let's take a look. Let's start looking at that. So if you go to the next slide, conjoined twins. We looked last week, the development of virtue. So working on things like faith, hope, love, joy, peace, patience, gentleness, kindness, goodness, I got off track, self-control. Working on those things in our life, it's not a selfish thing, because when we work on love, joy, peace, patience, it forces us to deal with other people. You cannot work on patience unless you have some blessed soul in your life that's going to try it. Right? You can't just sit all by yourself and work on patience. You need someone, because that's easy. You need someone to kind of... You need the phone to ring and go, "Yes, Lord, you're developing patience in me." You know what I mean? You can't work on patience. It drives us outward. You can't work on love without something to without someone to sacrifice for. And remember, when I say love, I don't mean the romantic kind of love that's popular in the world today. I mean the sort of love that gives yourself for another person. The love that people seem to crave today is a love that makes you feel good, right? You get into a relationship with someone because you feel good. Well, Jesus' sort of love is you get into a relationship to give yourself to the other person, to give of your time, to give of your finances, to give of yourself, to give of who you are to the other person. Feeling good in a response is just a great side effect. It's not the center. You can't work on love without someone to sacrifice for. You can't work on faith without a God to trust in. You need, faith requires an object. And for you to grow in faith in your life, you need someone you can trust in, a God you can trust in. You can't work on humility without someone to be honest with. If you're alone in the woods, you can't really be humble or proud. It's not until you meet someone that comes to the forefront, right? It's interesting. Did anyone grow up reading those naughty books? N-O-D-D-Y, about the little nodding toy? Enid, no? Okay. I have a stack of these old books, and Ryan found them. And the one we're reading now is Naughty Goes to School. And I don't think they publish the old ones today because they have messages that aren't so appropriate for our world today. But one of the things that I found interesting was the first story we read, it's volume number 6 in the series, is Naughty Goes to School. And Naughty is this little toy, and he's cleaning off his car, and he's very proud that he's got the nicest car, and he's the best driver, and he's so happy, and the bear from next door says, "Oh, what a nice car you have," and he gets all proud of it, and then he starts making up songs about how good a driver he is and how smart he is, and he's going around singing songs about how smart he is, and his hat falls off. It's a blue hat with a little bell on the end. See what you're missing out not having these books? His hat falls off, and he tries to put it on, it falls off, he tries to put it on again, it falls off, and he doesn't know what to do, so he goes to his friend, Big Ears. Probably another reason why it's actually like a garden gnome sort of character. But he goes to his friend Big Ears and says, "I got a problem. My hat won't fit on." He says, "I see what's happened. Your head is swollen and your hat won't fit on. You need to go to school to realize how much you don't know." And so the whole book is about Naughty getting over. He's going to like kindergarten. He's getting over a swollen head. How would that fit in our society today? Constant affirmation. So I felt so awkward reading it to Ryan. I'm like, I always tell him he's smart. Maybe I should be. Anyways. Self-esteem is good, but it just shows you where virtues have drifted over 50 years. You can't be humble without someone to be honest with. Heart work, virtues, character drives us beyond ourselves to other people. And I'd say specifically, it drives us to God in worship, and it drives us out to mission into the world. Worship and mission are like conjoined twins. They used to be called Siamese twins after this famous Siamese twins that were joined, shared a liver in the 1800s. Anyways, now they're called conjoined twins. Conjoined twins are when two human beings, twins, come out of the womb and they're attached together somehow. Worship and mission are like conjoined twins because they're focused in different directions. Worship and mission, when you think of that, it seems so different. Well, we come to church and we sing songs. That's how we worship. And then we go overseas in an airplane and preach to the pagans. That's how we do mission. But they share the same heart. And that heart is God's creator love for this world. And they build off each other. Do you have someone in your life that you build off? Maybe you get an idea and they have a better one and then you escalate it and then it gets better and better and you kind of build off each other in that relationship? You have someone like that? My brother-in-law, Nathan, he's been here before. Him and I build off each other in a frightening way. If I don't know if you've been to Bon Echo Provincial Park, but it's a beautiful provincial park in, it's east of here, quite a little fairways. And it's this big lake with about a 200-foot cliff on the side. And it goes 200 feet straight up, and it goes 200 feet straight down. It's like this very deep lake built on a crevice where the land kind of came in like that. And so we were there, and we were playing and swimming, having a good time. And then one of us got the idea, why don't we rent a canoe? Okay. So we rented one of the canoes, and we played teeter-totter by standing on the gunwales out in the water and tried to knock each other off. But that was just the start of it. It's like, oh, look at those cliffs over there. Why don't we paddle over to those cliffs? Okay. Paddle over to the cliff. Wonder if we can climb that. Ah, sure we can. We're climbing up the cliffs. We should jump. And it goes from one to, okay, we should go higher. Yeah. Look, we can go higher. Yeah. And we build off each other, eh? And then it's like, we should jump. And we got up to about 60 or 70 feet. And it's a sheer drop, eh? So it's just like a sheer terror. You jump and you try to take a breath. And your adrenaline's pumping so bad, by the time you hit the water, you have no oxygen left. And then you're like struggling. But then the icing on the cake was... They have this little tour boat that people pile in and they go up and down the cliff to see the cliff. And we saw it coming, right? And so we're like, just wait. And right when they announced, we do not recommend that you jump off these cliffs. It is very dangerous. Everyone's like, cameras. That started with a very simple idea. Let's rent a canoe. Worship and mission in the same way they build off you. And children, don't try this at home. I told a story in my last church about jumping off the roof into the pool, and I got in so much trouble because every other kid tried to jump off. Anyways, don't try this at home. Is that good, Ange?
Sure.
Okay, awesome. Worship and mission build off each other in the same way. They grow off each other. You start one and the other goes. You start one and the other. When we worship God, it drives us out into the world to share the news. I mean, we sing songs like, God, you're amazing, you're beautiful, I stand in awe of you, you're beautiful beyond description. If we really mean what we say, we're not going to keep it bottled up. If we really worship that way, we won't have a choice but to be excited out there and share beyond our own walls. The other way, if we're out doing mission things, if you're out just being open about your faith and being honest to the people you see, and you see someone and you know that God's working on their heart, and it may take years, but you see them coming along and you see their heart softening and they start having those discussions about you with what does this whole Christianity thing mean? And you see God at work in your friend's life and you see them coming to Him, you can't help but praise Him for that. Worship drives us to mission, and mission drives us to worship. They build off each other in this beautiful, escalating adventure. I wanted to read John 1, 1-13. This message is how to be royalty. And I'm going to suggest that the essence of being royalty is being a very good mirror. John 1. I'm going to start reading at verse 6. Okay, 1 to 13. It's too famous to start at verse 6. In the beginning was the Word. They're talking about Jesus, in case you're new to this text. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him, we're talking about Jesus, in Him was life. And here's the part to focus on. The life was the light of men. Jesus' life, the life power within Him is the light we live by. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Anyone who's ever lit a candle knows what that's about. You light a candle, the darkness can't put a candle out. It always goes the other way.
There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. John was not the light, but he came to talk about, to bear witness about the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone. I got to pause on that phrase. Talking about Jesus. Jesus is the true light. And he doesn't just keep it to himself. Jesus is the true light that enlightens everyone else. Was coming into the world. He was in the world and the world was made through him, but the world did not know him. And he came to his own and his people did not receive him. But to those who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. And we'll just stop there our reading. John goes to great pains to say that Jesus Christ is the light. We sing a song, right? Light of the world, you step down into darkness, open my eyes, made me see. Jesus is the light, and his light enlightens. His light lights us up. We are light because of his light. And I really believe that what we are called to be as creatures created in God's image, we are called to be mirrors. The light of the world, the true light of the world, Jesus Christ shines on our hearts. And it's up to us to reflect that light. And when we reflect that light back up to God, it's called worship. Right? When we just praise God and tell him how amazing it is. That's the light of God shone back up on him. And when we just adjust the mirror a little bit and focus it outward, that's mission. Shining the light of Jesus wherever we go. And so this whole series on heart work, on developing love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, so on, in our own hearts, it's basically an act of cleaning the mirror. See, our mirrors, our life mirrors are stained. They're stained by the sins that so easily entrap us and keep us back. They're stained by the way we live in the old age and not in the new age. They're stained by the way we keep away from God. And the whole process of developing a heart for God is, you could think of it as getting out the Windex and shining up your mirror. Because the clearer your life is, the more brilliantly you will be able to reflect the light of God. And see how Christianity spread in that video? That's why. There were amazing people that's light, so that's mirrors were so clean that they just shone so brilliantly that God spoke to the world through them. Worship and mission. Let's take a little closer look at worship. Worship is a couple of things. Worship is the way we live our lives. And there's, I wanted to share this with you. I don't know if you've ever read A.W. Tozer. He's an old pastor from Chicago. I think he's passed away now. Yeah, he died in 63. Okay, it's been a while. But he wrote a series of messages. He spoke a series of messages on worship. And he wrote one message called, "If you worship on Sunday, what happens on Monday?" And this always stuck in me, so I thought I'd share it with you. Maybe it'll stick in you as well. If you cannot worship the Lord in the midst of your responsibilities on Monday, it's not very likely you were worshiping on Sunday. Doesn't that get you? If you cannot worship the Lord in the midst of your responsibilities on Monday, it was not very likely that you were worshiping him on Monday. We are called to worship God, first of all, in the way we live our life. The way you drive through town and interact with other drivers is worship. If you were here last Sunday night, Henry, who we'll talk about because she's away right now, she shared this message about, shared a little thing about driving and how it's so easy to get frustrated with people. Well, sure enough, the next morning, I'm driving to church, and I get to the end of the driveway. I think it was the next morning. It was close anyways. And I get to the end of Hamblin Drive. I'm just about to turn onto Manitoba, and there was a snowplow coming with his blade down, winging the banks back. And I'm right up, and it's coming down Manitoba. And it didn't pull its blade up or swerve to the side at all. It just loaded my car. I'm like, come on! And I think I threw my hands up in the air and went, come on! And then I'm like, we just talked about this the night before.
Keep your hands down. Every incident in our life is an opportunity to worship God. The way we deal with other drivers on the street is just one way we worship God. The way you talk to people, the way you work, the way you go to school, every element in your life is worship, has the potential, to be worship for God. But that's just the first way we worship. There's something else, and there's something very powerful, and that's what we did this morning. Because there's something special about the Lord's Day. The early believers worshiped together on the Lord's Day. They didn't keep Sabbath necessarily, like their Jewish ancestors did. Instead, they started meeting on a separate day of the week. And instead of celebrating Sabbath, they would come together and worship on the Lord's Day. And what that is everyone's individual lives of worship. So the way that you lived your life Monday through Saturday, the way all of us did, all comes together into one place, and we sing to our Creator. We pray to Him. If you don't like singing, we clap our hands, raise our hands, however the Spirit moves you. We do that all together. And that it's like everyone's life of worship throughout the week comes together. One way to look at it is, it's as if we're all playing instruments solo throughout the week, and when we come together on Sunday, it's a symphony before God. You ever wonder why support groups are so popular? There's a million and one different sort of support groups in the world for whatever you might be going through. Support groups are popular because they bring together people of like mind to share their experiences. Well, what we do on Sunday is we bring together worshipers to share our worship together. What we do on Sunday is critical. And it doesn't have to just be Sunday, obviously. Anytime you get together to worship, it's bringing our individual lives of worship together and praising God. Worship usually starts hot. If you've ever talked to a new believer, you'll see this in action. You know that they just can't slow down. They're just so excited, they can't stop. That N.T. Wright I've been reading, he suggests it's kind of like when you strike a match, it burns really hot and really fast, right? But then what happens? It just fizzles out, and that's the end of it. When we've been around the faith for a long time, it's easy to become like that. It's easy, you know what, to start with the best intentions and to be focused on worshiping God, and then you just losing steam. We need to be working on lighting candles, lighting fires that maintain, that burn, that steadily grow. Worship needs to continue after the initial buzz. We worship by the power of the Spirit. I wanted to take a little bit of time here because, you know, in particular, last Sunday was just, I was so blessed last Sunday in the worship service, in the song service. And I wanted to share just a little bit. I don't know if you were here last Sunday, you'll know, but there was this quiet part where sometimes, please don't be afraid of quieter parts or silence in the song service. Sometimes I feel like we should pray and pour out our hearts to God. So I don't sing, I don't really say anything, I just pause, and feel free to pause with me or to worship with your words if you feel like. But there was this slower, calmer, quiet moment in the service last week. And Jim spoke out in tongues, really strong, really forcefully, really directly, and very short. Just a short little message in tongues. And I don't know about you, but I felt in my heart that, you know what, there's no question this is of God. I know it just felt like God, and I don't know how to explain. It's just years of being around God, sometimes you feel like you know. And I really felt that was a godly moment. And you know, there are different gifts, there's different spiritual gifts in the Bible that are talked about. One of them is the gift of tongues. One of them is the gift of interpretation. So we just paused the service and I said, you know what, if you feel like you might have an interpretation or God's given you the interpretation for that, feel free to just share that. And a few people, I think three different people, shared some things that were all very good, very important. And that was it. That was the end of the day. And went home, and it was just a good worship service, a good time together. And came back that evening, and I heard a testimony about when Jim spoke those words in tongues, it was direct, immediate, and exactly what one person needed to hear. Like, no question. Like, clear as a bell, clear as day. And I didn't know about that in the service. I didn't know what was going on. I knew it was of God, but I didn't know the details. But God used one person to speak to another person into a situation he knew nothing about. And isn't it just amazing how God does that? I wanted to read a few scriptures because I feel like we're moving in that direction as a church. We looked at 1 Corinthians 13 a couple messages ago. It's the love chapter, right? We're going to 1 Corinthians. Well, I wanted to share the verses that surround the love chapter. I wanted to take a little passage from 1 Corinthians 12 and then a little passage from 1 Corinthians 14. So the love chapter is the center of all that we're going to talk about. The first thing is this: we worship God by the Spirit. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 4 to 11. Listen to how the church is described. Now there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are varieties of service, but the same Lord. There are varieties of activities, but it's the same God who empowers them all in everyone. Each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. Did you catch that? Everyone is given the each person who receives a manifestation of the Spirit, it's given not necessarily just for the self in public worship, but it's given for the common good. For to one is given the Spirit of the utterance of wisdom, to another the utterance of knowledge according to the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healing by one Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, and to another the ability to distinguish between spirits, and to another various kinds of tongues, and to another the interpretation of tongues. All these are empowered by one and the same Spirit, who apportions each one individually as he wills. So I think you've caught the main emphasis of that verse. There are many different ways that the Spirit works in a church, in a congregation. He listed 9 of them there, but there's others in other passages, and you get the idea that the Spirit can do whatever he wants, which is a pretty good attitude to have about God, right? Do whatever he wants. The Spirit speaks different manifestations, but it's all one Spirit, and it's all for the common good. And it just warms my heart when God works like that in our congregation. I just wanted you to know that. Don't be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of when it's God. There's another thing I wanted to share with you, though. And this is over on the other side of the love chapter in 1 Corinthians 14. And you see, the Corinthian church was messed up. People say, oh, wouldn't it be great to get back to living in the New Testament church? I would take this church over Corinth in a heartbeat. Corinth was messed up. The people went so far off the deep end in charismania and spirituality, they were all in it for themselves and not for the common good, that Paul had to like kind of corral them in and speak very sternly to them at times. And this is one of his little lessons. On the one side, yes, God, spiritual gifts, whatever you have to give us is awesome. Here's the other side of the love chapter, 1 Corinthians 14, 26. What then, brothers or sisters, when you come together, and now he's given them a little scolding, and this hasn't happened here, but I just wanted to throw it out there for us to consider. What then, brothers? When you come together, each one has a hymn, a lesson, a revelation, a tongue, or an interpretation. Let all things be done, first of all, for building up. I talked to a pastor once who said, you know what? I think 90% of what's called prophecy in the charismatic church today are just really good devotional thoughts that God is sharing with the person, but wasn't necessarily meant for the good of the whole congregation. And this is one thing that I really have to pray about, and I've really been working on myself, because I have a microphone. It's a lot easier to say something when you have a microphone and everyone's looking at you and expecting you to talk. I have to be really careful to think, when I feel God telling me something, I'm like, you know what, is this just for me? Is this something for my own spiritual walk, or is this something, Lord, that you want to share with the whole congregation? And I'd encourage you to think that way too. When you're in a worship service and maybe you feel like God's telling you, you know what, you need to say something. Just ask him, you know what, is this something for me? Is this something that, are you putting the finger on my life? Or is this something more broadly for the whole congregation? Because every manifestation of the Spirit in a congregation is to build up the whole body together.
If anyone speaks a tongue, let there be only two or at the most three, and let each take their turn and let someone interpret.
You get the impression they were having like tongue contests. They're all shouting out in tongues at the same time and everyone was going off and Paul just couldn't make heads or tails of it.
But if there's no one to interpret, let each of them keep silent in the church and speak to himself and to God. Let two or three prophets speak and let the others weigh what is said.
Can you imagine that? It's just the way it was to be. You know what? If you feel you have something to share that's from God, don't be afraid. If it's from God, it's from God. If it's just your own heart and we feel like it's not for the congregation, it's not a big deal. But when something is spoken like that, it's supposed to be weighed and considered and thought through.
Let the others weigh what is said. If a revelation is made to another sitting there, let the first be silent. Stop trying to talk over each other. For you all can prophesy one by one, that all may learn and be encouraged. And the Spirit, and this is another verse that always gets me, the spirits of the prophets, the spirit of the prophet, is subject to the prophet. For God is not a God of confusion, but a God of peace. The spirit of the prophet is subject to the prophet, because God is not a God of confusion, but a God of peace. I knew a lady once, a blessed saint, and she had the gift of prophecy, I can say with no doubt, because she said stuff that put the finger right where God's wanted it, and it's changed the course of, it's just no question. But how do I say this gently? She had a specific way of going about doing her prophecies, and she started in a bit of a high-pitched voice by saying, my people, and she'd start to sing it. And you know what, God love her, that's what God was doing in her heart, but the effect that had on the congregation was that everyone became so freaked out by the way she was going about offering her prophecies. There's a lot of people that think, well, I don't have that, so I can't say anything. The spirit of the prophet is subject to the prophets, because God is not a God of disorder, but a God of peace. If you feel you have something from God to say, you know what, sometimes he speaks directly and you just feel like you have to say, this is what the Lord is saying, and say it. I have no question, no problem with that at all. But you know what, most of the time, here's how God works in me. He'll just speak something to my heart, and I'll say, God, is this for me, or is this for the congregation? Is this for all of us? And if he says it's for all of us, I can just say, and you've heard me say it, you know what? I think this is what God wants to say to us. And say it. Because God is not a God of disorder, but a God of peace. I think the key is the encouragement to enjoy the manifestation of the Spirit and the caution not to go off the deep end with it all. In the middle of that is the love chapter. And if we are focused on having a deep love for each other, we're not going to be selfish in what we do, selfish in what we say, but we are going to allow the Spirit of God to work through us. If we live by the Spirit, let us also walk by the Spirit. Does that make sense? I know I can see you taking it in, and there's a lot of questions on this. I could go a long time on this topic, and we probably should do that at some point. But just some food for thought. Read those chapters on your own. Praise God for what he's doing here. The last point, mission. The king has given us a commission. Acts chapter 1, verses 7 to 3. Jesus is the risen king, right? Jesus said to him, this is just before he ascended into heaven, it is not for you to know the times or the seasons that the Father has fixed by his own authority, because they were questioning about when everything would happen, like human beings always do, and he says, it's not for you to know the time, just be faithful. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses
in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. Jesus' parting words to his church, the last thing he says before ascending to the Father after his resurrection is, receive the Holy Spirit and don't keep it to yourself. How do we be rulers under our King today? We do what he's told us to do. We shine that light off our mirrors into the world and be a light for him. We're witnesses in a couple of ways. We're witnesses by our words. There are times when we have to speak. When we have to speak up and say, you know what, no, this is what I believe, and say it. But we are also very strong witnesses in our life, and holiness has been called almost the missing component in evangelism. Okay, if any of you were around Christendom in the 90s, do you remember the Newsboys, that old Christian band? Okay, do you remember they had a song called Shine? Yeah? Okay, it's a catchy little tune. I was going to play it, but it sounded so dated when I played it, I thought I wouldn't do it here. But I love it's written, and you know what, before I talk about the song, Matthew 5, we'll read Philippians another time. Matthew 5, 14 to 16. This is Sermon on the Mount. You are the light of the world. Imagine that. The true light has come into the world and shone on us, enlightened us, and we are now the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and hide it under a basket, but put it on a stand so it gives light to the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Let your light shine before men, before the world, so that the world can see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. We are called to live lives of holiness, to develop the heart of God, and to live differently because of it. And that different sort of life was supposed to be a witness to the world around us of who we really are. And that Newsboys song, I love the chorus. It said, shine, make them wonder what you got. Isn't that a great line? Shine. Make them wonder what you've got. You know what? If you walk into a heated situation with humility, peace, and grace, everyone's going to go. They'll step back and wonder at how you can have peace in the middle of that. When you walk into a greedy society where everyone's focused on getting the next promotion, getting the next raise, and moving ahead in the social ladder, and you are generous to someone and give of yourself in love, people are going to go, what? Shine, make them wonder what you got. What is it then? Make them wish that they're not on the outside looking bored. Shine. I'm going to sing a song. That's how we're going to close this morning. We're going to sing the song From the Inside Out. Come on up, musicians. The song is called From the Inside Out, and it's really what we're called to do. We are called to develop love, joy, peace in us so that our mirrors will be bright. So that we can focus that light that God has shone on us back up to him in worship and back up in out into the world in mission. And it all starts on the inside, working on our heart values. So I don't know where you're at with worship. I don't know where you're at with mission. I don't know if anything I've shared this morning has challenged you in any way. But I'd encourage you to take the time that we sing this closing song to offer your heart to God and say, God, is there something in the area of worship or in the area of mission that you're challenging me to? Something that maybe I need to step forward in and be a little more bold in.